So we were saying we should also consider, it's useful to consider the region where the Gram partition function itself is positive, and it turns out to be positive on these two axes. And so it's quite normal to consider a mapping from the complex chemical potential plane to mu square. And in doing so, basically, what happens is that the negative real chemical potential axis ends up on top of the real chemical potential axis, positive, and the imaginary chemical potential is mapped onto this, the real part of the mu square, the complex mu square. So this means that if I now draw things in the complex mu square plane, so this will be real mu square, and this will be imaginary mu square, the Gram partition function is going to be real on the real axis and complex outside the real axis. And this brings back to the completely conventional situation in statistical mechanics, in which you have a partition function, you have an external parameter, the partition function remains real for real values of the external parameter, like the Ising model in an external magnetic field, and might become complex otherwise. So if I do this, it's quite natural at this point to forget about altogether, if I want, about imaginary values of mu square and consider the phase diagram in the real mu square, in mu square, just mu square considered as a real variable which can become positive and negative, and temperature plane. So this is just an alternative way, it's just to explain that somehow I don't need really to stay in this three-dimensional space. For simplicity, when it is convenient, I can just work in the T mu square plane.
I guess, you want to I guess it's not completely like an ordinary statistical system, because in an ordinary statistical system on the real axis, you would expect that the partition function remains real and positive.
I think
but
it is.
If it's a mu squared axis, it doesn't necessarily remain positive.
I think it does. It's just because you have the determinant.
Suppose there was a phase transition at mu equals to zero. This would mean that in the complex mu plane, not the complex mu squared plane, but in the complex mu plane, you would have a pinch of zeros of the partition function at zero.
I'm not sure I can do this reasoning exactly. I mean, one of the reasons why I find easy to think of that, of the complex mu square plane, is because in the complex mu square plane I can repeat a sort of a Li-Yang analysis, because exactly to the Li-Yang analysis I know that the partition function gets complex as soon as I come out.
But how do you think that the partition function is real from negative mu square?
Oh, it's just because from the positive, from the properties at imaginary chemical potential, just you have a real determinant. The partition function remains real following the reality of the determinant.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's true.
Oh. I mean, you could have a phase transition exactly at zero if you, you know, if your original system had you were exactly at the right point.
I mean, I can have a phase transition right at the origin. You mean in the mu square plane or
no,
in the
mu?
In the, yes, at t equal tc, right, of course. I have to scan the phase. I will then scan the phase diagram in a different, and I will discuss the analyticity properties as a function of temperature. It's just that I just slice the phase diagram and look how things look like. Don't know if it was the same question, Ove?
Related, I just wanted to add, I think you could make this point stronger. It's not just the convenience to choose this, but if you look at the symmetries, because of that reality property for positive and negative mu squared, I mean, you can immediately establish that mu squared is the variable in which the partition function is analytic. It's not mu.
Yeah, right.
So
it's
a very natural.
It's a very natural way.
Right, exactly.
I'm not losing generality just because also of this, there is also this other property that So in fact, even if I squeeze in the two axes, the positive and negative semi-axis together, I'm still not losing anything because the partition function is symmetric. So it's just to say that, in fact, if one doesn't like complex analysis or concept of analytic, one can always resort to this description, which is completely simple and conventional. That's it. Now, what do we know about this phase diagram? Of course, in the positive mu square, change the color. So in the positive mu square t, this is the phase diagram we want to learn about. Okay, of course, we cannot study any of this fancy physics at low temperature and high chemical potential. So this is the line which can be complicated by several other considerations, but let me sketch it this way. Now, what do we know about the negative mu square? Now, first interesting information is the fact that the grand canonical partition function is periodic in the imaginary chemical potential. There is a periodicity, T mu, which is 2 pi divided nt, and there is even it's nt nc. This was proved by Robert Jenweiss long ago. The 2 pi over nt is sort of more obvious. The nc is a little bit less obvious, but by doing appropriate manipulation of the partition function, basically exploiting the fact that imaginary chemical potential can be rewritten as a general boundary condition, they arrive at this. So this is well established and detected in numerical simulation. So basically, this translates in a periodicity in the mu square, in the negative mu square side. So if I continue, this means that in addition to that, there is a further symmetry we can prove that on this imaginary side, there are also symmetries, points of symmetries. Let me call this T mu symmetric, I don't know how to say. All these axes should be symmetry axes only on the negative mu square size at half this period. Again, from the is easily proven. So this means that if I try to continue this line, as it is very natural to do, I have to take into account the symmetries, and so I will end up with something like that. This just somehow on account of symmetries of the partition function.
We created a mu, and this is mu squared. So
that's mu squared. Yeah. This, for instance, this point will be 2 pi. And T and C squared. The first period, and so for the others. And this you can verify. Then, question, what happens is interesting to ask if these two lines come together or not. And the answer actually is yes. I'm sorry, it's too high for me. And it has been proven. It has been proven again by the gentleman who did prove this relation that at high temperature, these two lines indeed become one just sharp phase transition, and we have proven numerically that at least in 2 and 4 flavors, more or less, the chiral phase transition end up in this line.
So it's first order?
Yes, it's first order. At the best that we can see is first order. It turns out to be first order in the high temperature perturbation theory from these early calculations. And it seems to be first order from numerical results. So it's quite interesting. In fact, it is an interesting topic in itself, because here we have a first order phase transition, which is not chiral, because all of this region is a region of quark-gluon plasma. So this line of transition here is, again, a chiral phase transition. But this transition up here is no longer a chiral phase transition, because the chiral condensate is zero on both sides of the transition. So it's sort of curious. It's one of those models in which a chiral transition somehow enters into a different one. But that's all I have to say on this. So basically, this is the qualitative phase diagram that we want to investigate. And basically, what I want to do now. You see, basically there are four different regions of interest. One is a hadronic phase, or let's start. One is high temperature, very high temperature phase. Then there is one region which is, if I call this TC, TA, let me call it TA, one region which is critical temperature at mu equals zero, less than T, less than T of the endpoint. That's a little bit particular region. We will check, we will see what happens here. And then, sorry. And then there is the third region, which is the hadron, the hadronic phase. So what I want to tell you, in turn, what we can, what we will find, what we found in these regions, and especially what can be achieved by a better precision. In fact, so basically, what do we do in practice? What do we do in practice? We do simulations on this side, and then we try to analytically continue the results to the real chemical potential plane. Now, what is analytic continuation? What does analytic continuation mean? Well, we know it is quite simple. So the idea is the following. Suppose that I know a function f, which is analytic, in a domain D, so to speak. Now I consider, I want to find another function, f tilde, which is analytic in D tilde, in a larger domain, in which the original domain D is contained in this larger domain D tilde, and f and f tilde coincide in D, in the smaller domain. So that's what one wants to do. Now, in general, one can consider extensions analytic, non-analytic, whatever you want. So if f tilde is not analytic, I have infinite many choices to do so. I can consider infinite functions which extend f to a larger domain, of course. Interesting property of analytic functions is that if I require that the function is analytic, this extension is unique. So that's all the point. If I find, so in other words, if I have a perfect fit, if I have a perfect fit, I do my numerical simulation. If I have a perfect fit and I find the function which describes my data, this function for negative mu square or for imaginary chemical potential, this function will be the correct result for all in the entire plane.
Perfect is very important.
They should be. The word perfect is very important. The word perfect is very important. So all the question is how to control the error. But there could be another problem, because an alternative way to look at this is to consider a Taylor expansion. So one way to achieve control somehow over the parametrization of the function is to consider that the function is a polynomial. So from the discussion with analytic continuation, my function can be whatever. I can have whatever good guess. To achieve better control, I can say I want to choose a function which has a Taylor expansion, so which is a polynomial, and I want to interpret it as a Taylor expansion of my and want to interpret it as a Taylor expansion about mu equals zero. And then one might be tempted, one wonders, and this is a natural question to ask, which is the role of the radius of convergence of the Taylor expansion in all this game? So, because a Taylor expansion normally has a radius of convergence. And this is something that one has to check region by region. So, okay, this is the last draw, and then I show some results. So let me say what happens then from the point of view of the analytic properties when T is larger than the endpoint, this one endpoint. So when we are really in the high temperature limit of this model. Now I'm drawing again the phase diagram in the complex mu plane. So which are the non-analyticity of the free energy of the problem? So where are the phase transitions? So I know I have one here and one here. So I have these two line, 2 pi and TNC and minus 2 pi and TNC. So I want to describe things by, so I want to calculate here and I want to extend the result in this point. How big is the convergence? And I want to understand this also from the point of view of the Taylor expansion. So how big is the convergence radius of the Taylor expansion in this region? And how is this radius affecting the continuation? Well, actually, in perturbation theory, at very high temperature, I immediately know the answer that the radius of convergence of the Taylor expansion here is infinite. Just because the free energy is described by a polynomial, by a fourth order polynomial in chemical potential. So if I'm calculating exactly here, I know that the Fartesian function, the free energy must be something like a side coefficients, mu squared t squared plus mu to the fourth, plus t to the 4. And this is a finite polynomial.
Wait.
Yeah, yeah, in the extreme limit. It's just that it doesn't catch this singularity.
So you're saying that singularity disappears in the infinite temperature limit?
No, it is still there, but it cannot be seen in this form.
No, I would say it's not there because you have a non-interacting theory, right?
Well, if you think about the way Robert and Weiss derived this stuff, if we just repeat their derivation, they prove the periodicity of the free energy. So, and then they calculate the free energy itself in the sector where the phase of the Polyakov loop is zero. And so they say, if I calculate the free energy in the sector where the phase of the Polyakov loop is zero, I get this result. But, and this is the result they get, but I have to know that there must be a periodicity. Okay, they get these results with the minus sign of, no, sorry, with the minus sign here as a function of imaginary chemical potential, if you want to. But I have to know that there is a periodicity as a function of chemical potential, and so I have to replicate this free energy. So all these times with the appropriate periodicity, and I will need another color. Yes, I have. So this is the free energy. This one free energy that they replicate because they know about the periodicity. And so they know that the exact results as a function of imaginary chemical potential is always the lowest value of the free energy, which is this one.
No,
you have non-analyticity, but if you sit here and you do the Taylor expansion starting from here, there is no way you learn about this quantity.
But suppose I'm working with not a t is infinity, but a little bit of
right.
Less than infinity. Then there's always this tunneling between those things, and so there'll be a small.
This thing is grounded.
You will have, okay, let's see what.
Okay, if I'm working at finite v, then it's definitely not just giving the power series. So.
Yeah, but still, you continue. Let's see. This is what happens. So you agree that in the infinite temperature limit, you have infinite radius of convergence of the Taylor expansion.
I agree with that. But then
you've just drawn the curve, and I completely agree with the curve you drew. Exactly, and that has a kink. That's non-analytic.
No, but if you do
the radius of convergence of the Taylor series, if there are no other terms, is in fact infinite.
Is in fact infinite.
But the point is that it's finite.
How is it infinite? It's reaching from zero to the kink.
But it depends.
It's a finite series.
It's a finite series.
The series is developed, as she said, in one sector of the series.
But the Taylor expansion is a local property.
So you can continue this as far as you want. You won't see the other branches. But as soon as I go to either finite V,
that's another. Let me discuss another extreme case, which is zero temperature case. So I think we understand the infinite temperature limit. Okay. Let's see the zero temperature. Let's see the zero temperature, which is more worrisome. Because let's throw down the structure of singularity instead at zero temperature. That's the other thing, cancel everything. So I cancel, let me check the pattern of singularity at zero temperature. Now I do expect. These are the physical singularity that I'm going to encounter at minus mu chiral transition and plus mu of the chiral transition, which I know should be something like the Fermi energy, roughly, at zero, or roughly, exactly, actually, at the real zero temperature. At zero temperature, one knows also something else about the system, and we know that nothing should change till I'm hitting the Fermi level. So if I draw, and this can also be verified in the strong coupling limit of QCD, so if T equals zero, I'm drawing, I don't know, the order parameter as a function of mu, I will get a step function. Now again, if I'm sitting here, okay, if I am measuring along the imaginary chemical potential, what one gets is a constant psi bar psi as a function of imaginary chemical potential. And if you fit it, you fit.
It's real convergence, I can see why that's possible. Why in the imaginary direction is it also
true? It is also true because, well, you check it numerically.
And I guess it's because it's analytic. Yeah, fine. Okay.
Because, yeah, it's analytic and then, yeah.
Fine.
So what happens again? I'm sitting here and I am mu equals zero or have different values of imaginary chemical potential, and I see a constant function. So again, if I want to interpret it as a Taylor series, the radius of convergence of this Taylor series is infinite.
That's the Taylor series for psi bar psi. What about, is this for everything? I guess
for everything. Again,
it doesn't depend on mu.
It doesn't depend on mu. So the radius of convergence will be infinite. And that's very bad, and this is we see where the real limitation of this approach comes, that I have absolutely no way to measure. So I get correct results up to one value, which I cannot estimate. So that's the problem. But the radius of convergence is infinite, and I cannot use the radius of convergence to estimate the position of this point. That's the problem. So, Ove, you and I, we agree in the sense that certainly there is a problem somewhere. So that's the problem. Now, of course, there are all intermediate situations. And maybe in the last, still have some that I can show, then also some results. Let's continue. Okay, we understand this one, I guess. Let's see what happens. For instance, in the region of the hadron resonance gas model that Dominique has told us last week. So, now the situation is a little bit more tricky in the sense, if this is again the complex plane, mu r and mu I, so I know that but still, it's still useful. I must encounter somewhere the chiral transition, but at this point I don't know where. And I don't have any singularity around the imaginary axis. Again, I represent as a series At this point, I know nothing about the radius of convergence of this series here, because I have no input, no real input. Can be whatever. The only thing I know is that the radius of convergence, the radius of convergence of the Taylor series is greater or equal mu r. So in general, the radius of convergence of a series is larger or equal the distance.
How can it be larger than it, except in these special cases where it vanished?
For instance, for a first order transitions, I assume.
Well, that's the thing we were getting into the other day, actually. Yeah. First order transition, you can still always see it because there's a small tunneling problem.
Yeah, but imagine in the infinite volume limit. I'm talking now mathematically.
Well, infinite volume limit. The metastable phase doesn't really exist mathematically because there's a small probability of a bubble forming.
Yeah, yeah,
so
but
it's imaginary part. So it's got to be equal to mu r, but it'll never be greater than that.
Yeah, it can be, because, for instance, suppose that you have a function, you have to define somewhere, but suppose you have a function which diverges at this point, and for whatever reason, you want to truncate it. So this function would have such radius of convergence, because
it's... But what could physically truncate? The truncate is a first-order transition, as you're saying.
No, I mean, that's a generic statement about functions.
I'm just saying physically.
Then you consider a step function.
No, but physically, how can you except in this very special case of t equals 0, which we're
at.
It seems like I want t equals 0. It's a small chance of getting.
I have a function like that. So you have.
But it's not physical, right? I mean,
yeah,
I can write that down, but.
You have it certainly cannot be smaller. I mean, it can be larger, that's for sure. It can be infinite.
But as soon as the other phase can ever be seen in any way,
I don't think so.
I have an influence on your physics, and you have a different theory.
It's a different. If you think, how to say, for instance, think of a Landau-Ginzburg potential for a first order phase transition. Now you know that this is, for instance, at this temperature, we are in this phase. Then at some point, they become equal. And then the other guy starts dominating, right?
This is exactly the one I have in mind. And then
yeah.
And as soon as the other one starts dominating, even though you're metastable, you're only metastable for not infinite time, because there's an e to the minus the volume of the minimum bubble of the other thing. Which gives you a little bit of an imaginary part.
It's
extremely small, it's there, and therefore it's not analytic.
You are right, if you can do simulations, indeed, in this interval of temperature, if you were able to see it indeed in the metastable phase. But if you are doing simulations, if all of your information comes from temperature which are below the first spinodal point, all you can do, you will start following this.
There's always a spot at some time, which is exponentially long, it will eventually tunnel.
Mm-hmm. How can you tunnel? Because you are sitting.
You have to tunnel by creating a bubble which is larger than the.
With zero probability.
Once it's larger than the expand, it'll take over. And so you calculate the action of that bubble, and then the time it takes is e to the minus the action of that bubble. Now that's exponentially small.
Exponentially small.
But it's not
infinitely small. And then you cannot detect. I mean,
so there's a little rounding here. it's an exponentially small thing, but in principle, it's there. Right?
Even if this way, so you're telling me this is the situation, but you agree that if I'm sitting here and you have,
you never see it in any practical simulation.
You never see it in any practical simulation.
From a mathematical point of view.
No, from a mathematical point of view, certainly this is true because think of a step function. And this is a mathematically defined object, which you can even represent with a series.
Think sure.
And the two limiting cases I was discussing, these are cases.
Okay. I mean,
but let me say that this is...
In this case, they will never be larger than that, but the amount that it's larger, I mean, it's an exponentially small effect. And that's, continuing, you can always find a function which blows up somewhere, which is... Well, never mind. I mean... at elongated rate than you are at finite temperature.
But anyway, certainly cannot, it is true that cannot be smaller. This is true. That's, that's the only point, right? This cannot be smaller, that's for sure, because if you had a smaller radius of convergence, then you would have a singularity there. So I think that the difference can be, I doubt one can use any analytic continuation to estimate the position of this discontinuity. You think that with infinite precision you might, I doubt.
I mean, any real honest simulation, you might think that it's larger.
Yes.
But it actually isn't.
I think in general it can be larger. That's a generic mathematical statement. Then if we come to simulations, then I don't know. But as a generic mathematical statement,
well,
for sure.
I'm saying that my partition function is the sum of analytic curves, and it doesn't allow me a step function at finite temperature.
But let's say with the radius, which certainly cannot be smaller. And then at this point, one can certainly do collect all of the values from imaginary chemical potential. Actually, they will be periodic, so the only significant one. And then one can perform an analytic continuation, which anyway, numerically, the only point can be misleading because it's not obvious it's going to, again, one doesn't know where to stopping, when to truncate this analytic continuation. That's the point. At least the numerical results, apparently, they might show analyticity, even if you have reached this point. Yeah, numerically, this is what happens. So apparently that you might have a radius of convergence which is much larger, but nevertheless, you might cut your transition because on this finite radius. And then, so maybe I can still have 5 minutes. Yes,
oh, sure.
I sure can
it's
show.
So well,
but there is no, oh my, there is no overhead projector. Let me tell, then I think I can, no problem. I can just, I can do show and tell because maybe, that's no problem. Don't, it would be. It's my fault, I should have checked. I didn't even think. But then, let me just finish discussing this radius of convergence business in these other thermodynamic regions. And then I can, let's see, maybe let's try if you can. let me try.
Everybody needs to see precise data points, just to qualify.
Yeah, right. Let me see. For instance, let me see what happens then. In this region, let us discuss this region where the Hadron resonance gas model might apply. So this is with the, let me go again at this point. So the hadronic region. So basically, which kind of parametrization we want to use? So these are our data, first of all. So one can look at the data. So. Yes, we are talking of the numerical results below the critical temperature.
Of a hadron gas model?
No. Of real QCD, which we want to compare with the hadron resonance gas model. I was mentioning this because Dominique discussed at some length. So these are the numerical results for four-flavor QCD with the Birkhoff mass psi 0.05, which means pi of mass 500 MeV, so rather heavy. And these are data for the baryon number, which are collected at imaginary chemical potential, as a function of imaginary chemical potential. You see? Okay, you can pass them around.
And it's baryon number?
This is a baryon number, as an operator. It's the standard operator, is it?
It's expectation value?
It's expectation value.
I'm a little confused, because if we're back to this plane here, mu b being positive, I expect positive baryon number, say, negative, I expect negative baryon number.
It's the imaginary part.
The axis, I would have thought it would average to zero, so it must.
No. Is that you just take the, I mean, think, take the derivative of something which is the, say, the partition function. Take for real mu is something, is more complicated than it, but this is a reasonable parametrization, just for the sake of the argument. Okay. So as a function of imaginary chemical potential, this will be cosine 3 mu over t, and then the particle number would be the derivative with respect to chemical potential, and then it will be sin mu. So that's.
Wouldn't there be an I?
Yes, there will be an I.
Okay, so
you've
taken out this
factor. Okay. Okay, it depends what you are deriving with respect to. If you derive with respect to the imaginary part, then no.
So it's not exactly a physical thing, but it's fine, okay.
Yeah, no, it's not a physical thing. It's the object that you are supposed will give you the physical thing at some point.
Okay.
And so that's why it is oscillating. And that's also a way to demonstrate, to check the periodicity, Robert Gervais periodicity.
Okay.
Now, if we do want to do the analytic continuation, since we know, remember, that in this region, these observables will be periodic, the natural parametrization one would use for this is just a Fourier series. And so you have that n d mu will be a sum of cn sin n, where n is the index of the sum. So this is just very natural parametrization to use in this region. And we know it will be valid on the entire imaginary chemical potential axis and can be analytically continued. Again, if I parameterize this way, this is a function which is analytic all over in the complex plane. But I should not be worried about that. So there are no contradictions. It is just that this phase transition at real chemical potential is not visible. So when I do my analytic continuation of this, which produces this result, for instance, I have to be careful. So this is this is the result which I obtained. These are sine, and these are just hyperbolic sine. Okay, that's all one do. So one just has to stop. So if I do my analytic continuation of this object, which is very simply done, the only question is I have to know where to stop, because this series doesn't tell me. So I have to rely on independent calculation of the critical line, since the critical line has been calculated in this model, or by us and by Ove and Philippe and by other people, but just by using calculation, imaginary chemical potential. What happens in practice is that one knows where the analytic continuation has to be truncated. So I don't know if this is clear, but probably no. So if this is my particle density, which I'm calculating as a function of the chemical potential. This is, let me put it imaginary, mu imaginary, even if that's not, and this is mu real, otherwise it doesn't go. So here I have my oscillations. When I continue n d mu as a function of mu real appear and they get something of this form, I will continue up to infinite. But for this particular temperature, these are simulations done at a fixed temperature. So for this particular temperature where I am working, I know that there is a value. So if I'm working at this temperature, I know there is a value of the chemical potential which corresponds to this critical temperature. And in correspondence to this value, I have to truncate. And this gives me the critical value of the number density. So this is somehow how one can control the fact that apparently you have an infinite radius of convergence but finite discontinuity. You just plug by hand your critical value. Still from these calculations that I can show this as well. If we look at the order parameter.
That's another question is, how do you know when to truncate the sum?
Oh, yeah, that's.
Negative mu squared, it might be very nice, but
it's
very high mode on the other side, of course.
It is. That's a numerical question. And then we do fits. We first try with one exponential, then with two, then with three.
Translations, which is with a period which is shorter than the distance between your data points.
Right, at some point.
And it will blow up exponentially faster than the other side.
Right, right. That's how you control the errors. So the errors in this method, you control the errors exactly by saying if I use only one term, I get this big an error. If I put, okay, this is, was another plot. I'm afraid this is not very systematic. So you control the errors somehow. Sorry, I can pass this picture around, but you will see two lines here. And the first line, the errors is just the statistical errors associated with parameters, with one fit with one parameter. The other one is the results of the fit with two parameters, and you still, in any case, you put your errors, and then the overall error comes from this sort of.
But I guess there is also an overall uncertainty saying that there could be an important very high mode on the left-hand side of mu squared x,
sure,
which will blow up very quickly on the right-hand side.
That's right. Okay, you can say that these higher modes are zero with a greater confidence, so you keep on doing fits and try to say that all the higher modes are zero within 1%, et cetera, et cetera.
Now can you test higher modes which has a period which is much, much higher than
distance
between your data?
I guess the problem with analytic theory, there's always this possibility that you.
So you have
you have some physical, set. I mean, at some point, I think it seems stable, and I believe that the principle that it always.
I think one improvement actually that one should plug into this approach is more or less in the line of what Junko Shigemitsu was explaining last week, and to do these Bayesian methods, and then, for instance, you can do fits of your points with 2,000 different modes, and then, she had 6 points, and then, but certainly this is a sort of an improvement that one can try. But you are right, or you can cross-check with, for instance, what the Bielefeld people did to check that the Boltzmann approximation to Hadron resonance gas model is correct, since they only do Taylor expansion. They did the Taylor expansion of these numbers of the n over mu up to the sixth order. And then you start checking, and this is another check, that the derivatives have the ratio you would expect from a pure sign behavior. So let me remind you that in the Boltzmann, so-called Boltzmann approximation, this reduces to a single term. So you just have a 3 mu over temperature. And so one way to check if this is correct, you just compute the derivatives, and you start calculating the ratios of all of these derivatives, and see if they are what you expect. So in a sense, this is a cross-check that one can do. But still, I believe that it is simpler to do in the other way. So an alternative.
Yes. Why don't we continue the result that you know analytically for the hidden gas model to imaginary potential?
Yes, exactly. Very good. Absolutely. Yes, I agree. I should have said this before, actually, because this is a very nice capability of this method, because, of course, if you have a model, you just analytically continue the model, as you said. And this is, for instance, a mismatch. I don't know if one can say, but it's exactly what Dominique just said. You take the analytic continuation of the Boltzmann approximation to the hadron resonance gas model, which is this one, and you take the ratio of your numerical data to this analytic form, and at this point this analytic continuation is exact, and you check that this is a straight line, that more or less this is. Of course, errors are big. But then to answer Kim, I should say that these calculations are very cheap. I had very little computer time, so these are really very rudimentary. It should not be difficult to improve. And so, and then, but then you see this makes a nice straight line, which confirms that one single, I don't know, one single mode is enough to describe. And then what I can, there is a paper, actually all the numerical results are published, I should also say, not this plot, but I mean, my collaborator, actually his name is Massimo Delia, and did really very good work on this. Let me just one last comment on this region, and then perhaps we close. You see how the chiral condensate looks like. I don't know if you can see. This is the same game played with the chiral condensate. And here the chiral condensate again has been truncated at the point where one has estimated the transition, the critical point. And you see, although the mass is not zero, so I'm not able to say what really happened in the chiral limit. But apparently, the condensate changes very little. So this is suggestive that the chiral condensate will not be zero in this model at the chiral phase transition. In other words, this suggests a strategy to study the order of the phase transition within this approach. Because I just, if I were able to do this in the smaller masses and extrapolate to the chiral limit, I will be able to see for two different temperatures if this chiral condensate is zero or not zero on the critical line. So, but, so this is...
But that again depends on having a fairly accurate feeling for where the critical line is.
That's very important, but... Yeah.
Especially if it's, you know, if it is second order, it's going to be very steep.
Absolutely, absolutely. So it's very critical. I mean, in all these approaches, so the point I want to make is that if you are using this analytic continuation, there is absolutely no way that you can estimate self-consistently from the analytic continuation the critical line.
If the first line had an endpoint, then you might be able to, right? Because at that point, it becomes second order.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. That's the strategy I'm advocating, that one can, but still you need to know the position of the critical line. So if you know the position of the critical line.
Well, first order, because at some point it's supposed to be ended.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then at some point you notice that this extrapolation goes, becomes zero, and once the extrapolation becomes zero, then you say, so that's an alternative way, which still requires, and something which I really would like to try, at least in two flavors, is something doable, and this can be done. And another, but okay, maybe since it is noon, perhaps I content myself with the hadronic phase, and we will have more time, I'm sure, to chat the coming days, so.
Okay.
Thanks, sorry for the lack of... Okay, that's all.
It actually didn't matter that you couldn't show them because you explained it so clearly. So.
Well, I'm not sure. You're very kind, but I'll be glad to show you my features whenever you wish. Yeah, okay, so perhaps we should...